We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. Our presenting sponsor is BetUS, a place for you to wager on the games with the NBA Finals here at BetUS. They have great payouts, the industry's biggest bonuses, and every bet type you could dream of. You can join now by calling 1-800-69-BETUS or online at BetUS.com. Get a sign-up bonus of 125% by using the promo code DANE125. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid. I'm going to bring Britt Robson of The Athletic in here shortly to react to and discuss Gerson Rosa's middle of the offseason press conference he had earlier this week. But before we get to that, I want to let you know kind of what the plan is for the pod here through the month of July. And that plan is that we will be back to our 3 episodes per week cadence through the rest of this month. Obviously, things are relatively quiet on the Timberwolves front at the moment. But as I record this on Thursday, we're exactly 3 weeks away from the draft. And then 3 days after that, the NBA free agency begins. And a week after that, Summer League is starting in Vegas. So relevant Wolves news is coming. But in the meantime, these next 3 weeks, I'll be focusing on the NBA Finals with Britt some. And then Wildeberg and I will start knocking off some more of those film reviews of the top prospects in this upcoming draft. You can look for a Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga film review that'll be posting on Friday. And then, of course, if anything Wolves relevant pops up, I'll get to that as well. With the Wolves, something always seems to happen, and hopefully that something will be much more encouraging than Anthony Edwards spraining his ankle out in Vegas. Man. Anyways, thanks for sticking with the pod. Let's bring in Britt and parse through kind of the tea leaves of Gerson Rosa's press conference that happened on Tuesday. All right, so the Minnesota Timberwolves are hosting this weekend what is functionally a second NBA draft combine at Target Center, Mayo Clinic Square, downtown Minneapolis. And with that came the opportunity for those of us in the local media, Britt Robson, myself, everyone else on the beat, to have kind of a rare mid-offseason press conference with the Wolves president of basketball operations, Gerson Rosas. Rosas talked about the event, fielded many questions, though, about just the offseason in general, roster construction trades, all those type of things. Britt, you and I haven't really had the chance to talk about this presser or anything. So I want to get up the questions that you brought up specifically to Rosas, but just generally, Britt Robson of The Athletic, what's up? What were your general takeaways from this Gerson Rosas press conference?
I think it was a public relations smokescreen. A lot of it. In terms of the fact that they don't have a pick, that's not good news. The reason they don't have a pick is because they kind of whiffed that aspect of the D'Lo Wiggins deal, although, many people could argue, I could even argue credibly, that, the deal might still get made anyway. But I think relevance is something that Rosas understands the Wolves need in this market. It seems like a pretty good opportunity with the Twins in a swoon and hockey off and everything else. And also to kind of remind people that, hey, Rosas's claim to fame is I'm the guy who's constantly pushing to upgrade this roster. I'm Mr. Active. I don't leave a stone unturned. And he really wanted to make that impression in various ways during this press conference. He pretty much said, we're having it so that I can talk trades with other people.
He did. And
he also pretty much said that everything is on the table. He mentioned free agency in terms of signs and trades. So, you know, that's how pretty much the only way they're going to get free agents of any consequence. Yeah. And so, and he talks about, you know, just because we don't have a pick now doesn't mean we're not going to be there when it happens. And, you know, so there wasn't ever a time where he tried to slow things down, where he said what could have been a logical thing to say, which was we finally had some stability at the end of last year under a new coach, and we began to make slow but sure strides with the existing personnel. I'm kind of curious to see how that personnel continues to gel under my handpicked coach, Chris Finch, and then we'll negotiate from there. Instead, the message was,
trading. We're going to make a trade.
Maybe we can blow this thing up after all, you know?
Right. So I guess that was kind of as I'm leaving it and just kind of going through the transcripts and my notes or whatever. I think I wrote trade down like 11 different times. And so I guess what I started thinking about was like, what if they don't make a trade this offseason? You know,
uh-huh.
Right. Like,
which what, I think what, is, I think is, unless you're talking about something on the margins, like seventh man and a second round pick for, you know, some guy.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to happen. But the implication was more like, we're talking to the Sixers every day about Ben Simmons and this and that and all that.
Right.
And I think it's just objectively the more likely path is that they don't make that big trade. I'm not ruling it out. Obviously anything could happen, but I think this will age kind of poorly if the roster does end up being largely very similar, which is increasingly seeming to me, from what I'm hearing, to be the most likely path for the Timberwolves, is that it's pretty much, this is the group.
Yeah, and I think, again, it's better to not make a deal than make a bad deal. And
for sure, yeah.
And I also think that you don't know yet. I mean, all right, yeah, Ben Simmons obviously is a prize that should be coveted by this organization and should require an extensive realignment of the roster, an extensive. I mean, obviously, at least two of your core personnel, unless you're going to just mortgage your draft picks into the end of the decade. And so that's a big ask. I think Rosas has the stones to do it. But again, I think there's a lot of teams around the league that can offer more and also excite Simmons more. And so I think what's going to come out of this, I don't think it's going to necessarily age badly or backfire, because all Rosas really has to do is say, hey, you know, we did our due diligence. We tried really hard. We got into extensive talks with everybody. And, you know, that can be confirmed by the various, you know, gnomes around the league, the Woj and his brethren, you know. But it at the same time, you know, that's okay. I'm far more interested, quite frankly, to I've been saying this for a while now. The two most important changes between this time last year and now are that we have an idea that Anthony Edwards could be something special, and Chris Finch is a pretty good coach. Yep. I'm kind of curious to see how the ongoing status quo affects that. I'm particularly interested to see if they do go status quo, you know, what we are looking at in terms of frontline defense, which it remains, you know, the great white whale of the Rosas regime to some extent, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. Those are the two discernible positives that have come, you know, come to pass over the past 12 months is Anthony Edwards, you know, looks legit, knock on wood about this sprained ankle or whatever.
Right.
I think whatever. If you play basketball at all, you know that it's you get a group of 10, 15 guys together to play a pickup or work out together. It's like one in every four times you do that, somebody leaves hobbling massively with a sprained ankle. That's just right. Not to say, you know, who knows? Maybe it's terrible, but I think anybody knows that this could be something very
a terrible sprained ankle still doesn't knock him out of opening day. It does further the narrative that, oh, he doesn't have it, you know, no summer league, no preseason, ta-da. Yeah, all right, that's fine, you know. I mean, you know, it didn't seem to bother Ant that much, quite frankly. You know, a lot more could have been made out of holding Jared Culver out of summer league when he could have played in summer league. If ever a guy needs some seasoning in summer league, it seems to be Jared Culver. So anyway, I think that the Edwards sprained ankle, it reminds me, you know, remember last year when the Timberwolves weren't going to be in the bubble and they did get some workouts and we got like 90 second clips of practice and people began to like parse, oh, he looks good, you know.
Going Jared there. Vanderbilt. There was a lot of Jared Vanderbilt talk.
And actually, that actually rebuts my predilection because I was saying, you know, what do you get out of this stuff? As it turned out, Jared Vanderbilt was one of those, you know, maybe not a diamond in the rough, but a shiny piece of copper in the rough, at least, you know.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you bring up Finch, too. I think, like, is this where I, like, stand on this team in trying to see the glass half full? Like, those are the two big things floating in the water, our Ant and Finch. And then, obviously, they have, you know, they have good players outside of that, and Cat and D'Lo. But you can just look at Ant and Finch, and they are, like, for sure, or seemingly for sure, long-term kind of pieces of whatever, you know, whatever this is. And I know a coach doesn't always last forever, but with Ant, if he's going to sign a max extension someday, he's on the team for 8 more years from today.
So
he's, like, for sure in the water. Finch is in the water. Cat is, you know, Cat is too, and we'll see where that all goes. But kind of what Rosa's almost seemed to acknowledge in this is, like, yeah, everything else is going to change, and we're actively trying to make it change. I think the question is, as we play, like, believe it or not, is, you know, how true is this? How true is this assertion of we're getting super active versus how much is this a protection over the fact that optically, it looks very bad that a team that just won 23 games last season does not have their first round pick, does not have their second round pick, and has no real business dealing with the draft at all here coming
up in
a few weeks. And I think, as always, it's a little bit of both. And I see, I guess when I see positives in this event happening, I don't look at the trade stuff as much. What I think is great about it is you are showing players, executives, whoever, that, like, the Minnesota facilities are good because Mayo Clinic Square is good, Target Center is bad, but you got a good setup here. Minneapolis in the summertime is legit. Like, this is a nice place to be. I mean, you know, from when we've talked to other guys in the locker room over there, they're like, why the hell do you guys live here? Like, you're only here for the 6 months when it sucks. And so I think I really do believe there's value in that when you talk about future trades, future whatever down the line. And you are just kind of, from Rosa's perspective, you're kind of showing people that, hey, we're a professional organization right now. That might not have always been the case in the past. Right. Like, we are doing modern things and things that some other organizations aren't. So that's kind of where I see the value in it. I don't think people need to come to town for a second combine to be able to hammer out the protections on a trade for Ben Simmons. I don't think I don't think Elton Brand needs to roll through here for that to get hammered out. But yeah, it's an opportunity to have some face to face contact. It's just not the kind of the main piece of value I see in it.
Well, and it what may work out. I mean, Rosas obviously has contacts and people around the league. Morey is with the Sixers and et cetera, et cetera. And I do think that there are guys that just treat rosters like Rubik's cubes, and you know, just want to keep spinning things to see when all the same color can happen. And I think Rosas is one of those guys, you know. And so I think therefore, if you get a couple of those guys in, even if they're just, scratching each other's itch for a while and nothing comes of it, you get a sense, you know, the more you talk about basketball with executives of teams, the more you derive the best kind of intelligence to some extent, which is what somebody in a position of power actually thinks of some guy, even if that guy isn't on either one of their teams.
Totally, man. You totally. Know? I mean, that's what happened with, like, Covington.
Right.
That trade started, the negotiations on that trade started when Rosas got here. Right. And he wasn't traded for, you know, a whole 50 games into, like 9 months from the time Rosas took over. So there is that does happen. I think the gnomes don't always tell us that.
Right. And because the gnomes don't get the really good stuff. The gnomes get, you know, what the agents want them to get or what, you know, the gnomes are just functionaries, you know.
Highly paid functionaries.
Well, that's because there's a craven audience of people that, you know, care less about the games than what might happen to the games.
And you know, that's a big contingent of Timberwolves fans is that is the game here, right? And particularly at this time of year, like, we're not going to go back and, like, break down a Wolves-Blazers game from February or something. The analysis to be applied and the fun stuff to talk about is what can they do? What can they do with this roster so that it gets better? And I know last time we talked, you were of the mind that if they just roll it out there with this group next year, they're 41-win team, they 500, whatever. I'm not. I don't see it to be that way. So
mostly their ceiling, in fairness to me. I don't think that, you know, I wasn't saying they're going to be a 50-win team if everything
breaks. No, 500.
I know. That's what I mean, though. If everything breaks right, they're a 41-win team.
Oh, I thought you said 41 wins was like your prediction.
No, I would not say 41 wins. I would say that if, I mean, let's face it.
That's why I went,
No. Well, I mean, I'd have to go back and listen to it, but my sense is that I think this team is capable of being on the fringe of the playoff conversation.
Yeah.
I think that requires a 500 team to be on that fringe. Mm. And I said, I think they can get there. I mean, I
agree with that.
But, I mean, but to say I'll be disappointed if they win 37 games, I don't think that would be what my position is.
And we're talking about, you know, to clarify here, we're talking about this team, the roster from last year, minus, Ed Davis, Jordan McLaughlin, and you're adding the Antetokounmpo. That's what we're
exactly
talking about.
Exactly. And I do think the potential is there to have. There are 41-win teams and there are 41-win teams. A 41-win team that is, you know, sorting out the D'Lo Ant-Cat dynamic on both sides of the ball and that slots Jaden McDaniels into a position and a role that is consistent, that figures out Malik Beasley's place either in the starting lineup or off the bench, and also determines what we get for Ricky Rubio, or if what we get for Ricky Rubio is more of the same, his presence here. I mean, all of those things are slight variables that if most of them tilted positive, I can definitely see a 500 win team. I mean, yeah. 500 team. 500 and, wins would be a little rough.
I think for me, kind of the biggest thing that leads to that happening, or maybe even exceeding that and being an over 500 team, is D'Angelo Russell and him being even better than he was down these, which was good. Down
yeah,
these 20
you've
games.
Always that, remained an optimist about D'Angelo Russell, and I give you credit for that.
I don't even know if this is me being optimistic in this situation. I've been higher on D'Angelo Russell, I think, than most people.
Yeah.
I just think that my view of this roster, as is assessing it, like the temperature of it, is it does not have enough talent. Uh-huh. Well, certainly not enough balanced talent. And I think the one player on this team that if next year happens and we go, that guy has produced through a lot more talent than we might have previously thought, it's D'Angelo Russell, if that makes sense. And, you know, Ant has the ability to leap based on, like, age.
Right, right.
McDaniels has some of that, too. But I guess of the, like, adults on the roster, I'm not saying I would, like, bet on it, but I could see D'Angelo Russell having, like, a... You remember, like, Mike Conley would always make the All-Star team, like, that level of point guard in the West. But you're like, man, you for sure be up. Like, I totally see that ceiling for D'Angelo Russell, which I think is a really damn good player.
Yes, and I... Seeing is believing when it comes to defense, obviously. And
the ellipsis then that comes up.
And that, to me, a key aspect of this coming season, quite obviously, and I think I said this the last time we were on together, is if, in fact, defense is effort, and that's what the new defensive guy, Joseph Blair, is saying, effort over scheme, really, which I think is absolutely dead on. Mm-hmm. He's pointing at you, D'Angelo Russell, and Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards, the three guys who are going to be the crux of a very, very strong offense, all have to be massively improved on defense. D'Lo, the most improved, Ant significantly improved, and Kat, continuing what I thought was an improvement last year, but still has a ways to go. So that, to me, I would agree with you in the sense that if we're looking at where 5 to 7 wins get made up over last year with existing status quo, it will be defensive effort and married to scheme and continuity. And let's face it, when the great thing about a team quickening into something good is that it's like making a jigsaw puzzle. You know, you get the corners, you start to fill in a little bit. The other pieces become much easier. And so once you identify what you don't have yet, after you have some really good core stuff, then that's the fun part. The quickening happens. Well, if you suck on defense, the quickening never happens. You know,
right.
I mean, you can get the pinnacle of what you get is like making the playoffs on the last day of the season with the third ranked offense and the 24th ranked defense, which is what happened during the Tibbs Taj Butler period. But that is sustainable. And so, you know, there you go.
So I want to get to, I thought the two questions you asked, Rosas, were really interesting. Let's take a quick break and then get to those. The NBA finals are here and this summer's betting action is heating up with my friends over at BetUS. Looking at some of the odds over at BetUS today, they have the Suns as relatively heavy favorites to win the championship after winning game one. The Suns were -160 moneyline favorites before the series started, and that is already up to -290 at BetUS. So if you're a Bucks believer, this is a good time to get in on them. The Bucks are now +260 underdogs in the series. And if I were going to bet on the Bucks, I'd actually take a look at the MVP odds for Giannis. You can get +375 at BetUS on Giannis winning the MVP. that's kind of where I would seem to see some value in it. I think if the Bucks win, Giannis wins MVP. And with the UFC, MLB, golf, Summer Olympics, football season all just around the corner, you need a sports book with great payouts. BetUS has the industry's biggest bonuses and every kind of bet type you could dream of. BetUS has been a pioneer in online betting for over 25 years and pride themselves on being America's favorite sports book. So take advantage of this action-packed summer and sign up today at BetUS.com. That's BetUS.com or 1-800-69-BETUS. Again, receive 125% sign-up bonus when you use the promo code DANE125. If you miss tip-off, forget to bet. That's not a problem. BetUS has live betting all the way up to the final buzzer. If you think it's too early to bet on the NFL, at BetUS, week one lines are already live for you to bet on. If you want to play in the casino, they got blackjack, reels, everything you could do. Hundreds of games in the BetUS casino. I bet at BetUS, and so should you. Join now by calling 1-800-69-BETUS or online at BetUS.com. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like Liz and Mike. When they got a bigger car for their soon-to-be bigger family, USAA helped them get covered and find savings.
That was the easy part.
USAA, what you're made of, we're made for.
So, Britt, your first question to Gerson Rosas, I guess it was kind of a two-part question, but the first thing you asked about was what Gerson Rosas' opinion was in regards to this roster needing veteran leadership. I thought Rosas gave a very interesting answer to that. But first, I guess I just want to ask you, what's the genesis of you needing to ask that question outside of just maybe the simple belief where you're like, this team obviously needs veteran leadership?
I thought it might give me a window into what he was thinking about Rubio going forward, since Rubio is the veteran leader on the team and is the most likely punctable piece. In my view, he's coming to the end of a $17, $18 million a year contract. And also does have, you know, legit value in terms of quote unquote veteran leadership, because Anthony Edwards swears by him, you know, unasked. He volunteers how much he loves Ricky Rubio on a regular basis. And so, and Rubio for his part, you know, gives as good as he gets in that department. So That's cool. But I also think that this roster, Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell, are suspect leaders, not necessarily through any fault of their own. They just don't have that natural leader gene that seems.
Or we haven't seen that show up yet in a way that has.
Yeah, that's an optimistic way of looking at it. Right. And so, how much is the organization aware of that? It's less important now that Finch is on instead of Ryan Saunders, because it's one thing to have a callow coach as well as no leadership, veteran leadership. Finch has filled some of that leadership void just by being, I think, a very forceful, accountable guy. I mean, if you don't play well, you might not play in the fourth quarter. That's almost as good as having a good leader in the locker room. Players know where they stand
right. In
terms of accountability. So that was the reason I asked the question. And then also just in terms of roster building, do you want to shake things up? Because this team, as you just mentioned, has the potential. I mean, Katz and D'Lo, I think, are in their sixth, seventh year or something. It isn't like they're young anymore.
No, right.
You know, and so veteran leadership is an interesting catchphrase.
So what Rosas said was that adding veteran leadership was, quote, a high, high priority on our list
right. This
offseason, but with the caveat of, those vets got to be able to play.
Yeah, no figureheads.
Yeah, and so
no more Ed Davises.
Yeah, and he was like, well, you know, Ed Davis kind of it was.
Well, he
was
threw a bone at Davis because he asked him.
Well, yeah, and Ed Davis probably deserves that bone. Just
I guess.
Yeah, but what he was saying was not that we need guys who can
play.
Yeah, because
he literally said that.
Yeah, he was like, when I asked him about. Why the plan isn't to continue to stock the cupboards with with young players anymore.
Right, right.
He was like, well, the reality of the situation is, you know, if we brought in a second rounder or a late first rounder right now, they would be lower on the totem pole than, you know, your Naz Reeds, your Jared Vanderbilts, your Jaden McDaniels. They wouldn't have a, if you brought in the 33rd overall pick, they wouldn't have a chance to play here.
That's true, but okay.
Let me finish it. And so what he was then getting at with the veteran thing, to your point, was you need guys who can come in and obviously be above the Naz Reeds, the Jared Vanderbilts, and those sort of things. So a rookie would have a glass ceiling. The veterans they have to be above that glass ceiling by a discernible margin.
I think that is a good interpretation. I think the other aspect of his answer to your question was actually the most exciting thing he said in the entire time, which was, we were assembling pieces before. Now we're at the stage where we're trying to figure out who to keep and who to punt.
Yep.
I mean, that's pretty much what he said. You know, we are in the next stage. We are in the stage now of not determining what kind of talent we're going to gather. We're determining what pieces we don't want anymore that we can leverage into pieces we really do want. And that's a cool mindset. That's an optimistic mindset about what he can pivot to now, that I think that will be actually the thing that either will be very prescient or won't age well.
Sure.
What we're really talking about there is Malik Beasley, perhaps D'Angelo Russell, maybe even Cat, in terms of people he suddenly says, all right, we have some core here. Now let's get serious. Let's start to, you know, you've talked about this being the summer of the Rosa tsunami, you know, for a while now. And, you know, I think he would probably like to do that if his hands weren't tied. And so the question becomes, I mean, can he, you know, we just poo-pooed it.
Where do you aim the waves? That's kind of the...
Right, exactly. And so, but I do think that was a really interesting answer. And that was in answer to your question. I mean, you were saying, you know, why, you know, as you characterized it before, you know, why are we going away from youth? And he was saying, look, our youth is there. Now we need people, if we're going to add significantly, we're not going to be adding along that line. I asked him about the dual timeline was the second part of my question.
Right. Let's do that. But with the veteran leadership part, okay, first, the one part we didn't hit on is, I think people are confused as to whether, just because I was a couple like emails and, you know, Twitter interactions and stuff like that, of whether Rosas believes Rubio passes that level, that like proverbial line in the sand where he is above those guys and is thus a vet who can play. Was it your perception that the way Rosas characterized this, that Rubio is in fact one of those vets who you would want to have because he's not only a vet, but he can also play?
Absolutely. That's absolutely the impression he tried to leave. And whether or not he actually believes that, I don't know, but I know it is certainly in his interest to talk up Ricky Rubio right now.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, again, if Rosas wants to do big things, and Rosas does, I don't think when we called the whole thing a smokescreen, it wasn't because we don't think Rosas is itching to do something. It's mm-hmm. because we don't think Rosas can do something under the current scheme. But if he winds up, he can do something, then I think Ricky Rubio is almost certainly a part of it. You know, and he did say, you know, I mean, we've already had conversations, and the kind of veteran we would need would require a player, you know, who, you know, is at a premium, and, you know, we would have to think about, you know, and I'm thinking Jaden McDaniels as he's talking like that, you know, I mean, that's the kind of, it's the kind of premium the Wolves have right now isn't like gaudy stars. It's guys who, you know, quicken the pulse of team builders. You know, Oklahoma City going after Jaden McDaniels would be almost as interesting as, you know, what Philly wants for Ben Simmons in some ways, you know?
Well, I mean, this is kind of an aside, but if I was Sam Presti, that's exactly what I would be doing right now. Just trying to pick up some of those type of dudes along the way, you know, like throw out a couple bucks here and there. So you're like not all waiting until the very end. And I'm not saying the Wolves should trade Jaden McDaniels.
Right.
But to your point, those are kind of, we always think about GMs or presidents of basketball operations trading for that second or third star to add to their team, when really below that, the most impactful types of players to trade for are young players who are not yet there, but are on cheap contracts and have the potential to either get there or to be an extremely valuable quote unquote role player. And it's, yes, I think Rosas wants to do the star hunting thing, but I think he also wants that. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, it's another path. If you have three guys who can, at least now, it could all evaporate into smoke, you know, with a bad season. But right now you can say with a straight face that Ant, Cat, and D'Lo are your big three moving forward. They're all young enough. They're all
big enough.
They've all flashed, enough stuff so that you could say, yeah, all right, you know, the Wolves are riding with those three and they're going to be building around it. They've got a McDaniels, they got a Balmero, they got a Beasley, right. You know, ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. You can squint and make something sound pretty good.
But, which ties into your timelines.
Exactly. Your timeline thing. I've said it many times. I think the timeline thing, I myself don't get it. I think that the rosters are too dynamic anymore. You know, roster construction is a 2 or 3 year process tops. And so worrying about timelines because somebody's 29 and somebody's 23 doesn't make sense to me. Or 27 and 20 in this case or whatever.
And my pushback always to you is it's not about age. It's about where they're at in their contract. Because I do believe, do buy into the timeline conversation. And the way you functionally phrased it to Rosas was, you know, can you into the Cat and D'Lo timeline while also going into the Ant and Jaden timeline was what you said. And
he understood the meaning of that question too.
He did, because you weren't that direct with it. And what he basically said was what Ant and Jaden did this year made me think about really looking at that being the primary timeline.
Right.
But then he said, what was the word he used?
We need to be flexible. He backtracked in a hurry. Yeah.
We need to stay flexible and he said we can jump back and forth between the two timelines.
Which indicates that, you know, if need be, I'll throw Ant and J-Mac under the bus, you know?
Yeah, and I just, to me, in my opinion, that is a terrible idea. Right. I think whatever path you want to choose, you need to choose a damn path. You need to say it's the Cat and D'Lo path and we're going for it, and it's... or it's the Ant and Jaden path we're going for. And that doesn't mean you choose the Cat and D'Lo path and you trade Ant. I'm not saying
Right.
What are you prioritizing? What are you aiming at? This team doesn't have enough resources, talent, a whole bunch of things weighing it down that you can't linger between the two. You can't. It's going to...
See, I think we disagree about that. You need to put all the
resources... Yeah, right. I feel pretty strongly about it.
Well, and you have a more of a general manager bent than I do. I'm much more of a coach's bent or, you know, I don't know, schmo on the sideline bent. But essentially...
Clear, we're both schmos. We're both schmos on the sidelines.
Yeah, but yes. I mean, you know...
I know what you mean.
Isn't your master's thesis about the salary cap? I mean, that's not, you know...
Not masters, but yes, thesis.
Okay,
yes.
All right, thesis, all right. But so anyway, the point is, you know the inner workings of that kind of stuff better than I do. And
yeah, but Brett, that's not even what I'm getting at, man. It's just, it's this, it's the idea. You know what I'm talking about? You're
I know.
Expending resources in both paths when you only have a finite amount of resources.
But Phoenix shifted to a 36-year-old point guard and is on the cusp of winning a ring. I mean, and
so did the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves did the same thing with Jimmy Butler.
And the
same
amount,
thing with Jimmy Butler.
And the amount of treasure
doesn't always work.
The amount of treasure that the Bucks forked over for Drew Holiday was enormous. He's the, you know, arguably the third ring in that big three.
Yeah.
You know, and yet what, how many draft choices? You know, I mean, it's
yeah,
just
it's like three, maybe four, I think, or yeah. three in a swap or something. Like
yeah.
That. You're right.
And so again, it's
but I'm about
that wrecks
it, man.
The timeline.
it's picking a path. I don't mind that for Milwaukee.
Okay.
Don't. And they might get fucked. Like
right.
like
right.
if this doesn't work and now they got 30.
Well, they have Giannis
million.
For 4 years, so
yeah, but just kind of again running into that wall
of
you know, Middleton makes a ton, Holiday makes a ton, whatever. Like
right.
I just again, and I might be wrong. It's just the way my mind looks at these things is choose a path
mm-hmm.
and invest in it. There's multiple paths that can work. I just think, yeah, I'm repeating myself, but I just think you.
Okay, so let's get into the dangerous territory of if you were dismantling the D'Lo cat path.
Yeah, it's.
How do you approach that? Would Ant be better off with Cat as the primary leftover or D'Lo as the primary leftover?
Cat, because Cat's a lot better.
Okay. So, and what would you want to try to acquire for the D'Lo piece that would complement Ant and Cat?
Yeah, I mean,
somebody like Ben Simmons, I imagine.
Yeah, I don't think it's about again, I don't think if you're prioritizing, and again, I'm not saying the Ant and Jaden path
right,
is the path.
Right. No, I know.
I would for sure say the Ant and Jaden path was the path if you got a top three pick here. That I don't even think that would be really, well, I'd have a much more aggressive argument with you if you're arguing against that. But where you stand right now, I don't think it's about it's Ant and Jaden and you dump Cat and you trade D'Lo. You just start leaning your considerations towards what's the best for those two, you know, 3-4 years down the line. In the meantime, they're still playing with Cat and D'Lo. You're still going. You're just not making any sort of all-in move to further bolster Cat and D'Lo at the sake of future draft picks and that sort of thing. Like, that is the leaning into the Ant and Jaden window. There's also
okay.
the leaning into the Cat and D'Lo window, which I'm very open to as well. As
right.
long as you lean, just
right.
don't stay in the middle.
Okay, given that, given what you've said, I would definitely lean Ant Jaden simply because I think what's exciting for me this year as a prospect would be to see Cat continue this transformation, which is happening more in his mind than it is in reality right now, but is still willing to be executed to some extent, I think. His Cat becomes much more of a dirty work star. He becomes a guy who is better on defense because he works harder and has more responsibilities. It isn't simply drop coverage. Stays in the low post more than the arc and dishes assists or gets
makes the path.
Gets on the high point, you know, gets on the high pick and roll. It spreads the floor for the other guys rather than himself. Still shoots, you know, obviously greatly, but suddenly becomes more Bam Adebayo than Jimmy Butler. In terms of an offense, you know,
sure.
in terms of being a very, very capable complement rather than the straw that stirs the drink. If that can happen, and one of the ways that's allowed to happen is that Cat rehabilitates his defensive reputation, this team could have a really interesting look if in also Blair and Finch can engage D'Lo into something approaching mediocrity on defense. Then you've got, because, you know, that those three are going to score when they have the ball, you know, and, you know, Beasley maybe also. You could use Okogie. You can use McDaniels. You know, you got pieces. You might be able to not be blowing smoke when you talk about 15th in defense. Mm-hmm. You know, if this team is like 7th on offense and 15th on defense with its existing personnel, that is the 41-win team I'm talking about as somebody who might sniff the Western Conference playoffs.
Well, I think one thing we're aligned on is, regardless of which timeline you do pick, whether it's the Ant and Jaden timeline or the Cat and D'Lo timeline, ultimately, Cat needs to be your number two or your 1B on your team.
Right.
And that's, and that that's requires, no shade on him. That's no shade. That's like how many. I will not, tell you. There's not a lot of ones.
And not only that, but if in fact that comes to pass, that is a great. I mean, that's a John Krasinski story waiting to happen. You know, I mean, that's a, you know, an evolution into something theoretically a step back when, in fact, it is a step forward in value. You know, it's the opposite.
And then the ideally, the dreamy greener pastures is it looks like Anthony Davis and LeBron, right?
Right.
Where AD went and became 1B. And then as it kind of plays out in the playoffs, it's like, well, you know, AD hits that big shot. AD was dominant in the finals. And yes, it's LeBron's team because he's LeBron, but I'm still maybe the best player on this team. You know, that's the narrative you want to kind of like click into in some sort of way. Not to compare like Anthony Davis to LeBron or something like that, but that is Anthony Edwards to LeBron.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been interesting to see how this played out in Philly in a different way. Simmons and Embiid is an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, who knows if Ben Simmons would have become what he became if Embiid wasn't so greedy in terms of both the credit and the, I mean, Embiid's shot selection still sucks. You know, a lot of the time, and as great as he is on, as great as he is on defense, his defensive prowess is set up by Simmons a lot more than vice versa. You know, right. I mean, Simmons isn't benefiting from letting his guy go by him and funneling him into Embiid. It is that Embiid gets to patrol because many guys,
Simmons
especially
has the point of attack control. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that dynamic should not have been so clearly Embiid 1A and Simmons 1B. And I think that ultimately hurt the Sixers.
See, and now this is what I think is interesting with the whole Cat thing, with the common names that we're throwing out a bunch. And I'm sure a bunch of people listening to this disagree with the idea that Cat isn't a number one and that we're short.
Right.
But I know that a lot of people do agree with what we're saying right here. And a lot of those people, myself included, are also the ones who are excited about trading for a Ben Simmons, trading for a Miles Turner, trading for a John Collins.
By all means.
And by going and getting one of those guys, you're almost affirming Cat's spot as a number one because those players are all clearly below Cat and have no path to becoming the best player above him.
But they are not above Anthony Edwards.
Mm-hmm. Wait.
That's where I mean, you go get a Ben Simmons or a John Collins because you've got suddenly another guy. It's almost like Middleton and Holiday versus Giannis. In a perfect world, Edwards ascends to no doubt 1A status a la Giannis, and Cat and a third guy, whether it's D'Lo Rising or somebody you trade for, mm-hmm. hold down very, very reputable 1B and 1BA, right. you know, slots. Sure.
Yeah, and, no, Middleton and Holiday is a good example there. Yeah.
And so if you have that, you know, because let's face it, you can make a case that, you know, Chris Middleton at the end of the game, you want the ball in Chris Middleton's hands.
Right.
And when it comes to going back on defense and a guy dribbling the ball at the top of the key, you want Drew Holiday on that guy more than Giannis and more than Middleton. You know, you want him to stop the guy who's going to take the big shot unless the guy penetrates. And then, you know, obviously Giannis. But I don't think Giannis is the guy as a perimeter defender who's going to be better than Drew Holiday most of the time.
I have a question for you, just kind of thinking out loud here.
Yeah.
So let's take the Ant becomes a 1A guy.
All right.
Path. Let's book that. Let's say 3 years from now, Anthony Edwards is 23 years old. And is a clear 1A guy in the league.
Is clearly a Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker type.
Sure. And I guess we're going to ignore contracts for the sake of this conversation because contract will have expired by then. But
well,
Cat,
see, it gets back to my controversial statement before, doesn't it?
Yes. but it's the middle of July. We're going to have a not totally logical conversation. 1A is Ant. Cat is your 1B. Which of the Simmons, Collins, Turner is the best 1C in that situation?
If I don't have to worry about what I have to give up to get him, Simmons, without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, I would love to have Ben Simmons between Cat and Ant. I mean, he's almost like the perfect guy. Yeah. But what you have to give up more to get him than you do Collins and Turner. So, and I would. I mean, I would give up D'Lo, Beasley. I might even, I don't know if I'd slide to one number one pick. I couldn't do multiple number one picks, but I don't think you're going to get them.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah.
You know, and so, again, you know.
I feel like every time we talk, like, I'm more into my whole big archetype thing. I'm more into one or the other. I'm back in on Turner. I'm back in on
all right.
that.
Good for you. Because I mean,
it's the cheapest one. It's the cheapest one.
Exactly. It's the cheapest one. Right, right. It is the cheapest one.
Which kind of fits what we were talking about with this idea that this offseason might be a relatively quiet one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. where you were like, well, the quiet offseason is the seventh man, you know, and you kind of have that, and it's largely this group, where the loud one is obviously Ben Simmons, you know.
Or even Turner. I mean, Turner would be loud.
Yeah, but it's a little quieter.
Yeah, a little quieter, but believe me, people would get excited. If we suddenly had a rim protector next to Cat and Cat was, you know, able to get into put up or shut up mode about how well mm-hmm. he can go out there and guard wings, I'm for that. I will tell you.
Yeah, I was talking to someone from another team this week and, you know, just –
right.
My all like, oh, what do you think about this Wolves?
Right.
And this person was just, Miles Turner is the obvious move. That would be that, like, just such a believer in what that, and I was like, yes, you're totally, you know, totally speaking my language of what I already think. But it was just, it got me back on the train. It got me back on the train where I'm just like, the rim protector idea, I like it. Let's see.
What will it take?
See what Cat can do. That was part of the conversation, and you know what was kind of like: is McDaniels in it or not? Right? And
I don't see how he isn't.
Yeah. Well, this is what I've always said for the framework of that deal: is it's very similar to the framework of the Aaron Gordon to Denver trade at the deadline,
which was
Gary Harris, which is an expiring $20 million. So that's functionally Rubio. It was a young player on a rookie contract, RJ Hampton. And then it was a future protected first round pick. The Wolves can easily put together a package like that with Rubio
better
being their Gary Harris.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, they can throw in a future protected first. They have all their picks going forward. And then the question becomes, you know, RJ Hampton versus Jaden McDaniels, right? and Jaden McDaniels is obviously his star as a
much ascendant. Better.
Yeah, but it, yeah, right.
I've never liked RJ Hampton.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. He's what has he played like 25 games in the NBA? I don't know. I liked him a little bit coming out. But whatever. You're still totally right that is more. I think the question Wolves fans again, as we optimistically like to do, is like, well, how do we find a way to do it without giving up the player we like, without the Jaden McDaniels? And that's what the hard part is Josh Okogie. That's not that. You know,
what if you substitute Beasley for Rubio?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not an expiring, and that gives them a stone shooter.
With McDermott's a free agent, right? They don't have that anymore.
Yeah. And Brogdon is expensive. So, and Sabonis is expensive. So you are, if you're Indiana, you're sacrificing. I mean, one of the obviously allures of Rubio is you get flexibility. How much is
Turner? But really with Malik, it's only one more year after this, and then it's the team option, right?
Yeah, but I mean, again, why would
it's not free agent? Yeah. What were you just saying?
So how much is Turner making?
18 this year, 18 next year.
And that's
2 years,
it, right?
36 left. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you're saying you would do this. Okay, so I'm Pritchard, right? He's the Kevin Pritchard there. And he says, I want Malik Beasley. I want a future protected first-round pick. And
Jade McDaniels.
Jade McDaniel. Well, I think that for sure. I'm taking that as the Pacers. I think if you bump it up to Beasley, now you can go less with your young prospect. You can Culver, a Kobe. There's a limited amount of options.
Let me
Don't
see.
Laugh.
You can have Rubio, McDaniels, or Beasley and Culver. Let me think about that.
Stop. No, I'm serious. Okay. So,
no, you're not. You're not serious if you have Jared Culver as like a sweetener.
I'm trying to. I clicked the wrong button on the trade machine. I don't know. Beasley,
what about
Okogie, Beasley. Okay. Beasley, Nas.
They love their big bookends. You know, I mean,
he's better than Bataze.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, Bataze, he had that fantastic game against the Wolves.
That's true. Okay, so Beasley, Nas, and a future protected first-round pick. Do you think Indiana does that?
No.
No?
I actually think that...
Turner's value is even higher than the Gordon level that I'm suggesting.
Well, who's their coach? They just hired a new coach.
Rick Carlisle.
So, yeah. I think a Jade McDaniels might work for Rick Carlisle.
A little Dorian Finney-Smith action.
Exactly. Or Maxi Kleber, for that matter.
Yeah,
true. Whereas Malik Beasley, I mean, that's
Tim Hardaway Jr.
They traded Seth Curry for Richardson. I mean,
might not have, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that Carlisle probably, he definitely endorsed the guy who made the trade. I mean, when Nelson left, he left. So anyway, he may also be intrigued, as most every coach would be, by the idea of trying to make Sabonis and Turner work in some fashion. And they have Caris LeVert.
Yeah.
Your guy. You love Caris LeVert, man.
Yeah, well, let's give him some time.
That's an interesting core. Brogdon, LeVert, Sabonis, and Turner in the East is a playoff team. And they're going to have a pick this year, in the lottery, at the end of the lottery. And Carlisle, I mean, I'd stand pat if I'm Indiana, quite frankly. I don't think you want to...
demand Rubio, McDaniels, and a future first.
Yeah, but even then... Yeah, actually, that would...
You do that if you're the Pacers. Rubio,
McDaniels... I don't know. See, that's what I don't know. I don't know how much... I think, given what the Pacers have, Sabonis is more overvalued than Turner. Sabonis has some really good things about him, but he cannot defend. Mm-hmm. And Turner's weaknesses on offense, I think, I don't know. I mean, I still think at the end of the day, Indiana should run back what they have with a well. If they hit the draft, mm-hmm. that's not an old team. You might, you know, you're in danger. Maybe a year from now, you can get Miles Turner for cheap.
Sure.
So I don't know. I mean, but back to your point about Turner.
Next to Cat.
I just think the Cat Edwards thing cries out for a very, there's a lot of players who look really good between Cat and Ant, because if you can defend and you can hit an open shot and you can, you know, you're one of those veterans that Rosas talked about. Hey, you know, that's good stuff. Now,
can they get them?
Can they get him? And Collins, I mean, obviously Collins is a guy that won't be gone anytime soon. He kind of played himself into a future in Atlanta, long-term future. And as he should have. I mean, you know, he transformed himself into being Trey's first option pick and roll option to being a pick and pop guy who's very good and a corner three marksman to some extent. In addition,
at their end of season press conference, I was reading on The Athletic, the owner spoke, and so did Schlenk, the Hawks GM, and it did not seem like a foregone conclusion. It was a "we hope John's back" sort of thing, and very much was like hinting at the "we can't pay him the max." So, you know, I obviously, whatever, it's on the record commentary, so that it always has a million different motivations. But I don't know. We sometimes do that thing where things go well and then we guarantee, like, but before the playoffs, wasn't the assumption more likely than not that Collins would leave versus stay in Atlanta? Probably.
Mm-hmm. Right.
50-50. So it was a great playoffs and he showed that he fits even better than we imagined. But I don't think that boosts it from 50-50 to 95.
And also, I think Max gets tossed around. That's one of the reasons I said it's not no guarantee that Cat gets the Max on his next deal. I think Max contracts, that's going to be one of the things that is going to begin to happen in the NBA, is that teams are going to start to flinch on all these multiple Max contracts that tie their hands, I think. I think it's far better to get somebody for 12.
It makes a lot more sense to flinch at a John Collins max than it makes to get a flinch at a Karl-Anthony Towns max.
Yeah, I would agree
with
that.
You're in different levels. You're right. I mean,
unless he's your 1C at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I see no world in which Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't get a max. Granted, it's the John Collins is coming off the rookie scale deal, so it's the 25% max.
Uh-huh.
So that's, you know, that's going to be a lot less. That's like the 30 some million dollars a year.
Right.
Cat will be getting the 30% max, which is now
like 42.
Yeah, 42 million a year. Or if he makes all NBA two of the next 3 years, or wins defensive player of the year, or wins MVP, then he's the supermax eligible, which is 35%. Right. And now we're at like the 50, a la Damian Lillard.
Okay, let's say he continues to be stuck behind Jokic, Embiid, and probably Gobert.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only eligible for 42 a year.
The 30%. I think that's most likely.
Yeah. And you would gladly pay him $42 million a year 2 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah, because okay, at that point, it's still going to be bearing some him like breaking his gigantic feet or something like that. It's a movable deal. It's like the Chris Paul deal kind of proved to be, not to say he's on the same level as Chris Paul, but it's,
we'll see. I'm comfortable seeing how that plays out.
Right. No, it is a good point, because it's like the same thing with the Wolves. You know, it's the being okay with D'Lo at $30 million as well. He's on the 25% max.
Yeah.
And not that D'Lo's a bad player. It's a cumbersome contract, though.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, I mean, we always have to say, I don't think Karl Anthony Towns is a bad player. In fact, I think there's a chance that he will mature into something less glitzy and more valuable. That's what I hope for him. I think that's what one of the things I see. And if Chris Finch and Anthony Edwards fulfill their respective potentials,
sure,
then the idea of Karl Anthony Towns being a proud glue guy, super glue guy, in his own mind, which is the only way you're really going to make that happen, then that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
It would be. Well, Britt, I think we kind of touched on the Gerson Rosas press conference.
Keep going with it. I mean,
I feel like we hit on it pretty good. Is there anything else that stood out from you to you from that?
I think what is going to be interesting is he did say, you know, we might come in on the draft. We haven't talked about that. Let's say, do you see any possibility of the Wolves trading existing resources to get into the draft at, say, like 10 or 15?
0%.
Uh-huh.
0% that high.
Even if it's your guy Beasley, because you like to punt Beasley every now and then.
Yeah, I don't even think that doesn't get you a lottery pick. You're not getting a lottery pick from Malik Beasley right now. A current lottery pick in the moment, cash in hand, you know, like, no. And I actually agree with Gerson, what he's saying of the, we got enough young guys.
Right.
Like,
right.
I don't, not that there aren't good prospects in this class. I've been watching, you know, the top prospects film on those guys, and I'm pretty into this class, but it's the Wolves are at a spot where they can't trade up from somewhere. They're trading right all the way in. So I think if the Wolves get into this draft, it's going to be the second round by buying a pick with cash or by trading a future second, though they don't have many of those because they traded one of those to get
Ed Bamaro,
Davis. Two of them to get Ed Davis, right. One of them also in the D'Angelo Russell Wiggins deal. Mm-hmm. Like, they have not managed their second round picks well. But
at least they don't sell them the way they used to.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I could see that happening at the highest. What I could see happening is, actually, I was doing one of these like live stream things, and somebody came on and brought this up. There's a lot of teams like OKC and who else?
New Orleans that have
numerous picks in the first round.
Have too many.
Yeah, literally have too many.
They're looking for either stash options, or they're looking to trade for a
2022
else.
First or right, something right, down right, the line. Right. That is the highest I could see the Wolves getting. So I think like OKC's at like 16 and 19 or something. So maybe like 19. But I mean, at the end of the day, the Wolves got 13 guys under contract already with Bamaro. Like, if you're going to be adding that, you're going to be adding in a rookie, you're going to be adding in somebody with the mid-level, the biannual, like, you're going to be making a trade. Are you going to do all those things? Okay, then where's your deal where you trade five players for one player? Like,
right.
I don't know. Or who are you cutting? Are you cutting Jalen Noel, non-guaranteed contract? You're not cutting Naz Reid's non-guaranteed
contract.
Well,
see, and that was the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, is that the part where Rosa said, we're going to get to the point where we have to start culling the herd. I'll go on record as saying that Okogie is really the only guy that I would be genuinely sorry to see go of the 4 through 12.
Sure.
What about you?
Nas. I mean, I think it makes sense to hold on to Nas.
Right. Yeah. What if they offered Caris LeVert for Nas?
Those guys' contracts are a little bit different.
you dodge the question because you don't.
No, I think I would trade Naz Reid for Caris LeVert. There you go. No, I think, I mean, I think you got some really cheap young pieces, Naz Reid and Jalen Noel there as well. I think the problem with the guys that I like on the roster at the bottom of the roster is they don't defend, you know, I like them. You and I have gone back and forth about Naz Reid a ton before. I like go back and I watch like Naz Reid's. I think about it in the same way when I'm watching
the
draft prospect
curve, right?
Yeah, totally. I love what I like the path to development for him, though that path just probably doesn't include ever being an average defender. It probably doesn't. At some point, would I put him in one of those trades like we were talking about as the young piece? Yeah, I would. I don't have the same, I guess. I like Josh Okogie, but I could see, I wouldn't be devastated to lose him in a trade there. And obviously, Culver, sure. But yeah, I guess I'm kind of with you. I won't be up in arms over any of the culling of the roster. Naz would be the biggest one that I would raise an eyebrow to because I think he's the best prospect that they have out of that top tier of players.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious because I do think that, what if it is, what if it's Naz Reid and a 2022 first rounder for a 10th pick in the draft this year?
I would think that costs more than that to get the 10th pick, but
Let's say the 15th pick then.
Yeah.
If this draft is as stocked as people think it is.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I would do that trade as a Naz Reid stockholder is that you are getting a player on a rookie scale deal who probably has more upside than Naz does. You have more team control over him than you would, with Naz the rest of his, his career. And the reason I'm like arguing against it in my own head is by trading that 2022 first round pick. That's a pick that you
might
can't
be
trade
better.
For.
Right.
Yeah. You can't trade that for Ben Simmons. You can't trade that for
right.
And I'd be concerned that the Wolves would mess up that pick at 15 and that it would be, it would lose value. So, that's why I'm kind of done with the draft for the Wolves. I am with Rosas in this of like, hey, we don't have any seconds, but we got all our firsts left. When the time comes, let's put them in the middle and go make a bigger move. The thing that I'm starting to question or wonder is new ownership getting towards the end of Rosa's contract. How much freedom does he have to trade first round picks 4, 6, 7 years down the road? Because if you're going to make a big trade, you need to, that's just how it works. You got to be trading every other year. You'd be trading a pick 7 years down the road. And I would be I highly doubt Gerson Rosas has right now the complete green light to just go and make potentially franchise altering decisions that impact 7 years down the road.
I bet he does.
You bet he does have that freedom?
Because I think that Glenn Taylor is a weird guy. Glenn Taylor is somebody who is willing to do certain things, but is not willing to do certain things. And believe me, that 20% that they own now and the 20 more they will own does not mean that Glenn Taylor won't have a shot to call here. The guy is a self-made man. He's never been in partnership. No,
but the good point here, Britt, is that it's like when you start talking about a trade like this, of this magnitude that is trading future assets, ownership is a part of this conversation.
Yes, that is true. And I would agree with that.
And I don't know who the hell owns the Timberwolves.
And,
so
and it may be confusing. That A-Rod and the other dude.
Laurie. Yep.
Laurie could talk him into it, but I think that would be required. I think Glenn Taylor will jealously guard his veto power as long as he has it. And right now he has it. And so I think he's a Rosas guy. And so Rosas is safe for at least a year, maybe two, in terms of, I think, if not carte blanche, they're right up against the luxury tax again. I mean, you know, he put Taylor into the luxury tax on a terrible team the first time. Taylor has got to see this thing through now for a while. It's almost like, you know, not quite Jared Culver level.
It's interesting. It's interesting that Rosa's contract ends after two more seasons, which is basically the timeline when Glenn Taylor ends.
Right.
Kinda. I guess it's like two and a half with Glenn.
That's right.
They're doing annual calendars, not NBA calendars. But
right. But by then, he's effectively a lame duck. Taylor is.
Yeah, right.
He's not going to be able to say, we're going to keep Rosas. They're going to say, look, you know, we've already got 40% of this team. And, it would get ugly.
Right. That's why this is all so very confusing, because you nor I nor pretty much anyone knows much at all about Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez. Even I'm not even doing the moving thing. I'm just saying, like, what are they like as owners of the Timberwolves? Are they going to be passive owners? Are they going to be very hands-on owners? Like, the answer to those questions determines a lot about the way this roster is constructed going forward and who stays around. A trade for a big player, a re-signing of Karl-Anthony Towns to the max, a taking steps to cater to Anthony Edwards so he signs his max extension so we don't get to a Luka Doncic type situation there.
Like, right.
Ownership plays a big role in that.
I agree with that.
And right now ownership is relatively I don't know if the question mark's the right word, but something we don't really understand.
And I think that there are two types, there's many types of ownership, let's face it. But if I'm for the purposes of this conversation, I think you could break ownership down into businessmen and celebrities. Do you want to be a celebrity owner or do you want to be a businessman?
I think we got one of each.
I think Laurie and A-Rod both would trend towards celebrity. I think Laurie he's the big ideas guy. He's a marketer of himself, you know. See, he's a celebrity too.
And I was in that camp. Uh-huh. I was in that camp and
conversations have changed your mind?
I think a little bit less so. I mean, he's a billionaire who's a relatively young billionaire, and he's friends with Alex Rodriguez. So there's always going to be a little
and
bit of celebrity.
And he wants to, build a society of the future. Guys who talk like that are not businessmen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just pushing back on that a little bit.
No, I agree.
I think I don't know, man. I kind of think Mark Laurie is a really important character in the future of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
And I think he blows wonderful smoke rings, you know. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that he's bad. In fact, that's actually a really kind of good quality to have as an owner. But I also think that at the end of the day, I think they could be talked into Ben Simmons. Let's put it that way.
I've gone both. There's a bunch of different ways to go with the ownership conversation. We already did the moving one. That's not what I'm doing right now. I'm talking about the hands-on approach and stuff, and
they'll be hands-on,
and I think that's going to be critical. I think that's going to be critical to not only salvage your organization but to kind of sustain the things that you currently have in place, like Anthony Edwards. I think ownership will play a really big role in that, and I'm curious because I mean, God, you think about how much you know in your head right now about Glenn Taylor. How many times, you know, it takes up a stupid amount of your brain, right? And right now it's like the part of your brain that is Mark Laurie. It's the article you read about the thing of the future.
Right.
It's seeing some, a couple clips here and there and the idea of him, right? Like, and that's the same
thing. It could be totally wrong, right?
Right. We just don't know. We're just doing our thing where we're, you know,
talking out of our ass.
Well, and presenting our own prejudice or our own perception of the situation.
That's a more genteel way to put it.
Exactly. Well, I'm excited.
All right, I'll let you go now.
I'm excited to talk to you about the NBA Finals, but we'll do that
in a week or so.
Yeah, maybe after. So I think it's Game 3 is on Sunday. So maybe we'll talk
early
we'll
next
talk
week.
After that, early next week. But between that, I think it's going to be a fun series. In I thought the first game was very competitive and should be fun to, you know, kind of see where it goes.
Yeah, it was amazing to me the pushback from anti-Milwaukee people. It was so, what a knee-jerk deal, man. I mean, if Chris Paul plays like he played the last two games, you know, the final game of the conference finals, and then it's going to be over in like five. Right. But, I mean, the dude, I don't, you know, he may have that much sustain left in him, but I think sooner or later he's going to go back to being a merely very good point guard, and then things are going to get interesting.
Exactly. And that's why we're recording this on Thursday, right? So game two coming up tonight. And even if the Suns take care of business there too, it's like, it's kind of the norm, right? You win the first two games. So at least for the majority of that game, it felt very competitive. It hinted at the possibility that it could be a 6 or 7 game series. Is that what I would bet on? I'd probably take the under, but, you know, For all the slander it's going to get about not being the best teams, I think it is going to be good games.
Ah, screw that. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just, Jesus.
I know. I'm with you.
And last thing, no team has been able to slow down Aiden. No team.
Wild, man. But what if he gets in foul trouble?
I know.
We're going to turn off the mics right now, though. We're going to talk about it because it's going to be so dated or whatever. But I'm curious to see what happens if DeAndre Ayton gets into foul trouble tonight, because there's no Dario Saric behind him and you got Frank Kaminsky. Like, what, you know, that's a big issue. But he's Britt Robson, at Britt Robson. Follow him on Twitter. You can read him at The Athletic. I'm Dane Moore at Dane Moore NBA. I'll be back tomorrow with a podcast with Will DeBerg on Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga. Until then, yep, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.